listening to the Save the Marriage podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Just yesterday, I was on the phone with a coaching client. My client had called in because my client wanted advice on how to save his marriage. And he was beginning to work to build his plan, which is part of what I recommend. And he was working on an apology letter, which is what I also recommend. And so I asked him to give me a little background information. And I noticed that over the next 15 minutes, he told me all of the negative things about his spouse, nothing about the state of the relationship, nothing about his own responsibility, but everything about how his spouse had every negative trait he could possibly describe. He went on for quite a while. I kept interrupting and asking him to refocus on the relationship and to think a little bit about his own place in that. And he would very quickly return to blaming his spouse and looking at all the downsides and negatives of his spouse. In the end, I'm not sure we made much progress, but for one very important reason. He was constantly looking for the worst in his spouse. Now, let me be clear. She probably had some issues that she could deal with. I say that not having ever met her, but knowing that we all have issues with which we need to deal. But that doesn't mean that all of the focus is on the negative. In fact, that's the immutable law of marriage I want to talk about this week, of looking for the best in your spouse. We break the law by looking for the worst in a spouse. We tend to not view people from a place of neutrality. We're just not very good at that. We judge people as positive or negative. And then we begin to look at evidence to support our view that we've decided on. And so if we love somebody, we'll continue to find reasons to love them. And if we think something negative of somebody, we will find evidence to support that too. My mother-in-law was a dear woman who had loyalty to a fault. If she loved you, she loved you regardless. And I watched her as she excused religious figures and politicians because she knew there was something else back there. She let them off the hook even when they were doing clearly wrong things. Now, that loyalty is a great attribute she had. And it is so much better, I think, in many times than the ones where we're constantly looking for what's wrong with the other person, what's broken about them, how they have fallen apart. This is what social scientists call confirmation bias. Confirmation bias is that place where we like to believe the things that support what we already believe. We like to find those out, and we all do it. In fact, we live in a culture with technology that makes it even easier to do that. Did you know that your devices are all looking to see what you're reading? So if on Facebook you keep opening the things that support the Republican views or the things that support the Democratic views or the things that support your conspiracy theories or the Green Party or the Libertarians or any other group, that Facebook's algorithm is watching that and begins to feed you more and more of what you already believe. And it's not just true on Facebook. It is true across the internet now. I have a reader that I've been playing with. It's a news reader. And what I notice is it delivers more and more of the same type of articles. I'm not getting a well-rounded place because it plays on an important place in our human psyche of confirmation bias. Confirmation bias simply says that we believe in articles and evidence that supports what we already believe. And we discount whatever challenges that. Now, that plays out in our lives, and it plays out in our marriages, and it plays out all around us. My father was a minister. When we were growing up as our teen years, you know, understand that teen years are rough for everybody. And in our church, there began to be a growing belief that one of the two of us, of my older brother and I, my younger brother was too young at that point to be included, but one of us was an angel and the other was the devil. I was the angel. My older brother was the devil in their mind. And so when my older brother did something wrong, they would say, "See, I told you." When my older brother did something right, and he did lots of that, they would say, "Oh, just you wait." When I did the good stuff, they would say, "Oh, see, there you go. That's who he is." When I made mistakes, they would say, "Oh, that's just a mistake. You'll see. He'll come back." Confirmation bias set us into that same pattern. The confirmation bias locked us into our roles. So the bias was for me to be the good guy and for my brother to be the bad guy, and any evidence was taken through that filter. So people were deciding whether to believe or discount that information, not based on the information at hand, but what they already believed about us. It's true about politics. Look around at how we're running campaigns these days, and you'll notice that there is confirmation bias everywhere. That's just how humans do things. It's also true about around brands, the big brands that we have a confirmation bias where, you know, if we already love that brand, we'll believe it when the good stuff comes out about it. And when bad stuff comes out, we'll say, oh, see, that's the sabotage. Somebody's trying to do them in. It's true with social views. We have beliefs about social values and norms. And when something challenges it, we find the evidence of why that's still an aberration and why that's wrong. And we stay with those views. We don't allow the challenges to come in. And then there's another little thing, not just confirmation bias, but attribution error. Attribution error is one of my favorite little social psychology tricks. Attribution error says that if you make a mistake, there is a flaw in you. If I make a mistake, it's just a mistake. How does that play out in a marriage? Well, what it means is that when your spouse does something, you're likely to say, see, that's what's wrong with them. This is from the family they grew up in. This is some flaw in their personality about how they were raised or how they are or something about what's wrong with them. You might make the same mistake, but you'll say, well, see, there was a reason for that. And the reason was, and you'll give a justification. The attribution error says that you'll let yourself off the hook and you'll hold that hook. You'll set the hook for the other person and hold them on that. Those two pieces, confirmation bias and attribution error, lead us down the path of either looking for the best or looking for the worst. And I'm going to tell you that my vote is looking for the best in the other person. Yes, we all have shortcomings. And yes, we need to have something of a realistic picture. But what I've noticed is when people tell me they have a realistic picture of their spouse, they almost always have a negative picture of their spouse. Rarely is it a positive one. So when we violate this law, we do it in a number of ways. First, we play the blame game. The blame game is rarely about blaming ourselves. Blaming is almost always about looking at the other person. And here's what I've noticed. People come into my office and they'll begin to tell me a story of what's wrong in their marriage. And then the other person will say, yeah, the story you just told is right, but there's something that started that. And they'll tell me a little bit about how they started the argument, and it's about the other person starting the argument. And that other person will then say, well, that's true, but before that, there was another incident, and they'll lead me back to that incident. And pretty soon, I'll notice that both are playing backward further and further to demonstrate that they are not at fault. It's not their fault. The other spouse takes the blame. Oh, sure, I participated in that, but I only participated because my spouse did X. And they both keep counting back. And my guess is if I let them count back far enough, they might even go back before they even met. They may go all the way back to the spouse's childhood when all of this began to be a part of it. So the blame game is where we're constantly looking to point the finger and say the other person is at fault. The second way we violate this law is by using the critical eye of lack. The critical eye of lack is when we have that critical look to see what our spouse lacks, not what they have. The fact is that none of us are well-rounded and complete individuals. We all have shortcomings. We all have strengths. We all have weaknesses. The question is whether we're going to play off of our strengths or get stuck focused on our weaknesses. And in this case, whether our spouse is aware of our strengths or is only looking at the weaknesses, the place we fall short. So many times I watch as somebody is so focused on what their spouse isn't doing that they miss completely what their spouse is doing. There is no way we're all going to have it all. And the fact is that we can either look with that critical eye of lack or the supportive eye of what's there, of the strengths the other person has. So when we use that critical eye of lack, we're violating this law. The third way we do it is a comparison of reality with the image that others portray. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means that when you go on Facebook and you see all of your friends having great adventures and in loving relationships with their spouse, having written long odes to the anniversaries and birthdays of their spouse, and you say, wow, why can't I have that? You're comparing what they're putting out on social media. You're putting out what they're showing the world. You're comparing what they're showing the world with what you know happens behind closed doors at your house. That's a dangerous place for us all to be, because our own reality, we're aware of all the pains, all the difficulties. But when we look at other people's realities, we're not aware of their pains and difficulties. Many times I've had people come in and say, if people only knew what we were like behind closed doors. They think we have a perfect marriage. We're the ones that they all compare to, and we're hurting. We don't know how to move forward ourselves, and yet we're, for them, the picture of a perfect marriage. We all portray that, and we see this over and over on social media when some blogger finally says, I'm not living the life that I've been telling you I've been living. I'm not the loving person with my kids that I'm portraying on social media. You're not seeing all the work that we do to pose those pictures. That comes out, but not enough for us to recognize that on a regular basis, we compare our inner world with the outer portrayal that others give. And in that, we violate the law of looking for the best. The other way we do this, number four, is that we play armchair therapist, not for ourselves, but for our spouse. I was speaking just the other day with a client who was telling me about how they were learning all of these psychological theories from a lot of training they were doing. And in the midst of all of that training, they were trying to hand it over to their spouse, to say to their spouse, do you see where you fell short? Do you see where you need to learn from this? They're basically playing armchair therapist. So what they had done is taken the possibility that the psychological theories they were learning would be helpful for them in their development, and they were using it as a litmus test, a psychological test for their spouse, leaving their spouse feeling very criticized and very hurt. So that's how we violate this law. How do we get back into obeying this law? Well, the first one is something that I've talked about before on a podcast. How about considering being the president of your spouse's fan club? Be your spouse's greatest fan. Find the ways to cheer them on, looking for the best. Find the ways you can be supportive of them. Cheer them on in everything they do, wishing them the best, wishing them to find where they can shine. We all have places where we can shine in the world. What if you were to decide to be your spouse's biggest fan and the president of their fan club? That would be a whole different approach. Now, remember, as a big fan of maybe a sporting a group, a team, you recognize that they're not going to win every time. But that doesn't mean you stop cheering them on when they're losing. In fact, the real fans are the ones that stand beside them when they're trying their best and still losing. So this isn't always about the fact that your spouse is the winner, but that you're always their fan, that you're always backing them, that you've always got their back, cheering them on, wishing them the best, holding them the highest esteem. Be the president of your spouse's fan club. The second thing is to work on gratitude. Look at what your spouse does bring to the table, where their gifts are, and be in gratitude for what they bring to that. Not just gratitude, but appreciation. The difference between that is gratitude is something you can feel inside. Appreciation is when you share it with the other person. Share what you are most grateful for. Share the gifts you see with your spouse. Many of us go a long time without someone telling us what we're good at. We spend day after day being told what we're not good at, being criticized at work with friends and everywhere else, but how many times is there somebody saying, you know what, you're really good at this. You're really good and effective at this, and somebody can tell them. So be grateful for those things. Work on the gratitude. Look for the things every day for which you are grateful of what your spouse brings to the table, and then show appreciation for it. Let your spouse know those things. It helps them to have that feedback, because sometimes our greatest strengths and gifts, we assume, is no big deal. And we think that's something everybody can do. But we can gift them by showing appreciation for that. The third thing is to focus on building the connection, building the relationship. One of the things that I've noticed is the more disconnected we allow ourselves to get in a relationship, the more critical we become of the other person. When we are connected, sometimes those issues aren't such a big deal. They don't bother us the way they do when we're disconnected. Many times people say, I need to solve this problem before we work on our connection. And my response is, you might find that that's no longer an issue once you're connected, that it's a lot easier to be accepting and loving and have that place of love, of respect and empathy. As I talked about last week, of that storge love, that empathetic love, when you're connected. A lot of times those small things really get under our skin because they're a symptom of the fact that we have allowed our relationship to disconnect. Build the connection and you'll notice that you'll be less critical and more loving and more able to point to those strengths your spouse has. And every spouse has them. Be your spouse's biggest fan and always look for the best. If this has been helpful, I would love it if you would share. There are ways to do that in social media if you're on the website just below. And if you need some help in figuring out how to look for the best and how to reconnect, please check out my Save the Marriage system. It's been sold now for a number of years, for 17 years around the world. And it has proven to be very effective in turning people's lives around in their marriage. It can help you too. You can find it at savethemarriage.com. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at savethemarriage.com.